There are a few things you need to know about the woman we're discussing today. First, she is on a very short list of the greatest Canadian athletes of all time. Second, she would probably never admit she belongs on that list, or actually even discuss that list at all. Third, she has been on the field for some of the most heartbreaking defeats any Canadian team has ever suffered.
France are through to the quarterfinals, a comprehensive victory over Canada. Full time in Bookham. Canada 0, France 4.
Finally, beginning today, after almost 20 years of leading perhaps the best soccer team Canada has ever fielded, Christine Sinclair has a chance to reach heights that would have been unimaginable when she began her career. Sinclair is 36 now. She's been Canada's rock forever. This might be her last Women's World Cup, and it might be Canada's best ever chance to hoist the trophy. And it might be our last chance to appreciate a woman who has never talked much, never cared about stats, never whined about the refs, never done anything but play great soccer. And she is now poised to become perhaps the best ever at that task. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Canada's first game in the Women's World Cup comes today against Cameroon, so we figured it was time to talk to Stephen Brunt of Sportsnet, who's covered these World Cups for years. Stephen, start with just, who is Christine Sinclair? Where did she come from? What's her origin story?
Well, she's from the Lower Mainland of BC. She comes from a soccer-playing family. Her two of her uncles played professionally with the Portland, an earlier incarnation of the Portland Timbers. Her dad played. She played as a kid, and you know, she played other sports as well, but was a prodigy, right? She was capped for Canada as a 16-year-old. It always astounds me how, you know, we're talking about the early days of the sport in the country. Like, Canada didn't have a women's national team until 1986.
Yeah.
You know, she played in the 95 World Cup, or the 94 World Cup, right?
What was the game like back then?
It was, if people are soccer people, they will understand what I'm saying here. It's like old-time English soccer, like vertical. So direct, you know, big, you know, kick it down the field, and the strongest and tallest and fittest would run underneath it. It was dominated by countries that could do that, you know, played that way, but it was also dominated by countries that put money into women's sport before other countries did, which, you know, is a pattern we've seen a lot, right?
Yeah.
Like early success in Olympic women's rowing, for instance, was because we invested in it. They're not taking nothing away from those great athletes, but we got on that bandwagon before a lot of other countries did. And in soccer, even a lot of traditional soccer countries declined to invest in the women's game. There was a, you know, level of chauvinism in those soccer cultures. So the, you know, the Brazils and the Spains and the Italies, they didn't do anything in women's soccer, but Germany did, and Norway did, and Sweden did, and we did to a degree. We, you know, we were kind of early adapters in terms of women's soccer, and the Americans did after Title IX.
Right.
Because Title IX was huge, right? And it created opportunities for collegiate athletes. So those were the countries that dominated early. But that was what, it was a power game, you know, a power game, a fitness game, and a, you know, and a size game, really strength game.
How did Christine Sinclair make her mark on that game, on this team? When did she come to, when did Canada notice her?
I would think, I guess was the U-20 tournament. I can remember because they changed it from U-19 to U-20 right immediately after. But it was the tournament in Edmonton where the golden generation, they got to the finals, lost to the Americans, a recurring theme here. But played in front of 40,000 plus people in Edmonton at Commonwealth Stadium, did big TV ratings. So Carol Lang and Melissa Tancredi and Sink, you know, were part of that team. And this golden generation of Canadian women, country embraced them in a way that it hadn't, I don't think it had embraced a soccer team, male or female, before. You know, we had a men's team that, you know, got to the World Cup in 86 and they won the Gold Cup and under Holger. But I don't think Canada had ever cared about soccer as much as they cared about that team that played in Edmonton. So that was kind of her debut for the Canadiens. She was the most valuable player, highest scorer, most valuable player in that tournament. So, you know, and then she joined the national, well, she played for the national team immediately after that. Again, with people like Charmaine Hooper, who was a great athlete in her own right. And they, you know, they did have a fourth place finish in a World Cup. People tend to forget that they did finish fourth. But, you know, I think what really started to put things on the map was what came later, and the evolution of the game and the evolution of the players.
Well, it's kind of a chicken or the egg situation, because you had Christine Sinclair in this golden generation that kind of took over that team and dragged it in front of everybody watching. And then once you know that it can do good TV ratings and people are really going to care, it becomes a lot easier to recruit talent, bring on sponsors, and all the rest of it that puts you a little bit further ahead.
Yeah, and parallel to that, the game is getting more sophisticated, evolving or changing in a way that soccer people found pleasing. You know, I always kind of separate myself because I've covered soccer for a long time, but soccer people always consider me an outsider. So I always kind of separate myself. But that the people who would kind of disdain women's football, women's soccer, started to see the ball being played on the ground more, you know, more of a passing game, a more sophisticated version of the game, and started to kind of give it its due. So those two things happen at the same time. One is that, yeah, you have this golden generation of Canadian players coming through who had succeeded on, you know, a stage, a very popular stage anyway. And at the same time, you had women's soccer gaining new respect. And of course, you had that explosion with the Americans, right? Where, you know, Brandi Chastain and all of that, you know, it became a big deal in the United States.
Yeah.
It was also the breakthrough from American soccer. You know, again, if you think about it, U.S. men's national team was, you know, pretty good for a long time. But what was the breakthrough for soccer in the U.S.? It was the women. You know, absolutely the women.
Describe that scene, because you probably, it's probably embedded in your memory of Brandi Chastain, and that's the only thing I remember of that time.
Yeah, we scored the winning goal and stripped off her jersey, was wearing a sports bra and had like an 8-pack. You know, she's absolutely ripped, right? Looks like, I think it was a moment of empowerment for a whole bunch of people. And I think for a whole bunch of young girls watching it, it was, I want to be her.
You know, yeah.
I want to play that game, because it was, you know, it wasn't dainty. It was ferocious. It was competitive. It was passionate. There were and there are a lot of great things about women's soccer.
Well, and in Canada, it's the women are better than the men's team by an order of magnitude recently. Anyway.
No, you know, like I could qualify that and say the pool's shallower. Again, we were early adapters. We probably put more emphasis on. And, you know, what you see now is that, you know, England's good now and the Netherlands is getting good. And again, some of these other soccer countries are kind of saying, hang on, well, Spain's suddenly pretty good. But, yeah, I think in Canada that A, they had the success, and B, I think people did start to kind of tune into the fact that someone who might be the best player in the world played for us.
So tell me about her then, because you've covered her for a while now. What is Sinclair like? She's known, at least to me and casual observers, for being pretty closed off.
Oh, yeah. You mean as a person?
As a person, as an athlete, how is she? What drives her?
She's super shy. She doesn't like doing interviews or doing press stuff. If you talk to her teammates, they'll tell you she's not shy, that she's got a great sense of humor, which she does. But she doesn't like playing the public role. I remember once I went down to interview her when I was still at the Globe and Mail. She was playing for the Western New York Flash or something. The leagues have come and gone, right? But one of those down near Buffalo somewhere, and they were having an open workout for kids. And I was driving down from the Globe, and I'd set it up through Canadian Soccer to do this interview. I think it was before the 2011 World Cup. So it looks like a low-pressure environment is what I'm saying. And it's going to be a nice story. And I got stuck in a little bit of traffic at the border. So I got there about 3 minutes before the interview was supposed to happen. But I was, you know, phoning people and telling them, look, I'm coming.
Right.
Look, she was in her car and she was going to leave. she was on her way. I almost had to throw myself in front of her car because she didn't want to do it. She just didn't want to do the interview. And it was, you know, it was an awkward interview and there wasn't much to it. And I've been persistent, I guess, with her to try and get to know her a little bit. And I have huge admiration for her as an athlete. So maybe that's part of it as well. But yeah, she's never going to be somebody who talks in sound bites. She's never going to be somebody who kind of toots her own horn. It's just not in her. She's, anybody's seen her. She is a passionate, ferocious competitor. And she does have a sense of humor. But it's hard to get past, you know, the veneer sometimes.
Why did you work so hard to get past that veneer?
You know, I think like a lot of it goes back to that 2011 World Cup, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. But I covered
Well, tell me about the 2011 World Cup.
Well, you know, so Canada went into Germany. The 2011 World Cup is in Germany. Canada, there's a sense that Canada could be competitive in this tournament. Sort of like now. You know, maybe not maybe the expectations weren't quite where they are now, but they were pretty darn high. And that was the moment for that golden generation of players, right? You know, aside from Carl Lang, who got hurt, that was that group. This was their moment. And Canada had hired an Italian to coach the team, Carolina Maracci. And the whole idea was that this was like finishing school, that she was going to teach them more sophisticated tactics and European training methods. And this is going to turn us into a footballing nation rather than a soccer nation, or a footballing team rather than a soccer team. And Carolina was an interesting, like a character from fiction, you know, and they had this whole group of Italian trainers and assistant coaches, and there was much intense talk and smoking of cigarettes and speaking of Italian. And she took them off to a training camp. They went to some hotel in the mountains in Italy and were locked off by themselves and trained. And, you know, all of this when you talk to them after the facts, you know, it sounded sort of like a prison camp, but it sounds nice now, but it wasn't fun. But they all said the right stuff that, okay, we're way better. We're way more sophisticated. We're going to play, we have learned enormous amounts from her. The opening game is against Germany in Berlin at the Olympic Stadium. Hmm. They know they're going to lose that game. Everybody knows they're going to lose that game. But they, you know, they compete, and Sink scores a goal on a free kick, I think, not a penalty. I think it was a free kick. But she also gets hit in the nose and breaks her nose, you know, spewing blood. And it was, you know, and this, there goes the tournament, right? So,
right.
So Carolina Maracci, again, she was very much into kind of intrigue and whispered conversations. And I'm covering this for the Globe and for Sportsnet. We were the rights holders. Mm-hmm. So I was as close to any team, I think, as I've ever been. And there are many whispered conversations. You know, was she going to play? And they wouldn't let her talk to the media. And she was wearing this, you know, like the mask that basketball players wear when they break their nose.
So right, the Hannibal Lecter mask.
Exactly, the Hannibal Lecter mask. And so she would be, and there would be sightings of her at the practices. She would be off on a side field in the distance, but we couldn't get any closer. And was she kicking the ball? Was she really practicing? And all the whole lead up to this thing is wither or sink. Would she play or wouldn't she play? And finally, I remember I was out for dinner. Some of us out, we were in the same restaurant as Carolina and her Italian entourage. And she paused in her smoking long enough to come over to me and say, I'd just like to tell you that she's going to play. So that goes out. So everybody sends out the message. Sink is going to play. But with all of this gamesmanship and stuff, they seem to have not actually paid any attention to France.
Right.
And the French were in ascendance at that point. It was a really good side. And they played Canada off the pitch.
Hmm.
So Canada's tournament is now done. 2 games in. They've still got to play Nigeria. The third, that game against Nigeria is the most dispiriting sporting contest I have ever seen or attended, because they were done. The team is emotionally shattered and their coach abandoned them. So the coach, Maracci, sat on the bench with her arms crossed and the body language was entirely, hey, it's not me. Just abandoned them. And, you know, I came to really like those women. And I do. I still like them. I think they're great people. And I felt so awful. And it was so gutting. Absolute worst. And their, you know, and their coaches. Imagine that being written off by your coach.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, wipe your hands. Not my fault. I'm the supreme tactician, and they just did not follow orders. So, you know, that absolute bottoming out. And then, you know, they hired John Herdman after that, and he came in with his kind of happy-go-lucky John Herdman Jordy personality and said, why do you guys play this game? You know, do you want to play this game?
Yeah.
And he helped them rebuild emotionally. And, you know, a year later they're in London, you know, they're at the Olympics and they win that bronze medal. It just as I've never seen anything as devastating as I saw in 2011, I've never been happier for any athlete I've ever covered than I was for those women in 2012. God knows they got screwed against the Americans, but the fact that they came back after that even and got that and won that medal, man, it brings a tear to my eye. It really does. Because they're great people, and they were wrecked. They were just wrecked. And I think, you know, God knows who might have quit and never played again if Herdman hadn't come along and if they hadn't kind of found themselves again.
And it's crazy that was 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
And Christine Sinclair is now 36. She's one of the last members of that team still playing. The last?
Yeah, I think, she's last of that. I think so. Was Sophie Schmidt on that team? She might have been. Sophie's still on the team, but that would be it. I think Erin McLeod and Diana Matheson could have been, but they're both hurt. But yeah, that she's the last of that generation for sure.
So what is this World Cup for Canada that starts today? What is it for this team? What is it for Sinclair?
Well, I don't think it's the end for her. I think she's going to play in the Olympics next year. Yeah, if they, you know, presuming they qualify, I assume she'll play in the Olympics next year. And it would not shock me if she played in another World Cup at age 40. I don't know that she couldn't.
That's amazing.
She, you know, I asked her about it, and she lives in Portland. She plays for the professional team there, the Thorns. She's done a little bit of coaching. She's, you know, very much in the sport, but I don't think this is the swan song.
How much is this team hers compared to those 2011 teams? Is she still the heart of it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You mean like there's some other people who are important on this team for sure. And there were other people on those teams who were important. But yeah, I think this is a really young group and a very, very talented group. And I think she's kind of everything, right? She's the best player on the team still, but she's, you know, the mentor, the hero of a lot of them. Like, think about it, again, 10 years. Like, think of the age of some of these young women on this team. Mm-hmm. They were kids watching London. Like, London to me seems like yesterday. You know, a lot of things seemed like yesterday to me, but that was the best part of those Olympics. Remember, like we won gold medals in those Olympics, but do you remember anything more than that soccer team? I don't.
No, I remember where I was watching that match.
Yeah.
Yeah. For anybody listening, Steven says he's not a soccer guy. I'm less of a soccer guy, and I watched that match.
Yeah, I'm a non-soccer guy, gets to cover soccer, so that's the best of all possible worlds. But yeah, like you know, Jeanne Becky or some of the women on this team, like they would have been kids watching that game going, I want to be her. And it, you know, and it wasn't just the result, right? It was that, I just, you know, the righteous indignation, right? The anger and the passion and her scoring those three goals against the Americans. And, you know, she's still mad about the referee and I don't blame her. Like to me, that it was the fighting spirit, you know, it was the, like if that's a Canadian thing, I'll take it. I'm quite happy to say that is her Canadianness coming out.
What about her game now on the pitch at age 36? She's actually the best player on the team at mm-hmm. that age, and she's closing in on records now.
Well, the cool thing is kind of how her game has evolved over time. You know, because, you know, in that game of, you know, big, tall, strong women running fast, she could do that. She kind of mirrors the sport. She can score, obviously. Like, that's, yeah, obviously. But she's got great vision on the field. You know, she's a great distributor. She can play behind the strikers a little bit if needs be and facilitate. Great IQ, like a crazy high football IQ. You know, she makes really good decisions. And her skills on the ball are, you know, maybe not as, you know, not as flashy as Marta or somebody like that, mm-hmm. but she's really good on the ball. But I think, yeah, I would say the main thing is, you know, it's kind of Gretzkian, right? She sees the game unfolding mm-hmm. around her and makes really good decisions about where the ball is going to go.
How close is she to being considered the greatest of all time in this game? Is she in that conversation?
Well, she should be. You know, she's three goals away from setting the all-time scoring record in international soccer, male or female. Uh-huh. So Abby Wambach holds that record, the American, who's retired, and is like kind of the arch nemesis if you're a Canadian right. or pretty much anybody else. Like Abby is a cartoon American. She is on that pedestal. And, you know, historically, yeah, there have been some, you know, Marta's still playing Brazil. She's a great, great player. Everybody, you know, she's the one that people kind of go to for who's the best player in the world, women's player in the world. They say, well, Marta. Jacinta doesn't get listed at the top very much. And, you know, never mind in the all-time list, in the current list, she would probably be listed fifth or sixth or seventh by a lot of people. But I think if you talk to a soccer person, a women's soccer person, you know, she's on five best players of all time? She'd be on that list? I think she'd have to be. I think it would be crazy not to put her on in that point on the list. And in terms of Canadian athletes, you know, this is my own personal crusade, but again, I think hockey players aside, because we got a lot of them, mm-hmm. she's one of the five greatest Canadian athletes of all time, male or female. Like, who else is on that list? Steve Nash, you know, the sprinters, you know.
Donovan Bailey.
Depending on whether you put Ben on or not. I always put Ben on, but some people don't. Some swimmers. But she's right there.
How does this team stack up at the World Cup compared to past iterations? We've had two bronze medals mm-hmm. now in a row.
At the Olympics, yeah.
At the Olympics, sorry, yeah. Is there reason to think that this one, this could be more?
Yeah, it, you know... The team, you know, we had the World Cup, right? We hosted.
Yes.
And they got to the knockout round. They lost to England. It was an okay result. It wasn't a great result, I didn't think, on home soil. That was kind of a transitional team. This is more fully, you know, that transition has really happened now. They've got a bit of a tricky draw. You know, that like the Netherlands is a really an up-and-coming side. And they're in their group. They've got New Zealand and they've got Cameroon. So, you know, they should get out of the group. But I think that, like, the Dutch are a side that a lot of people like, and they've got some really exciting players. Again, a soccer country kind of
right.
coming to women's soccer late in a lot of ways. If it breaks right, they haven't lost a match since last fall. Canada hasn't. That was to the Americans. You know, it kind of depends on how the draw falls after they get out of presumably get out of the group stage. But they're very talented. I think they're playing with a ton of confidence right now. As a unit, I think they're very, as you know, that's what Christine said, we're really good. You know, that was her, you know, wild overstatement. We're really good. I think they're really good. They would need some breaks, but they'll get into the knockout rounds and then it kind of depends on who they stack up against. But, you know, I just love to see them beat the Americans somehow. Just beat the Americans in a knockout game. You know, I don't care where it comes. Yeah, maybe, and then break Abby Wambach's record right in the same game. That'd be a great outcome. I think if that happens in the quarters or the wherever that might happen, I think we could all just go home happy.
Thanks, Stephen.
My pleasure.
Stephen Brunt from Sportsnet. Not a soccer guy, but Christine Sinclair fan for life. That was The Big Story. For more from us, we're at thebigstorypodcast.ca.
Hit that little search bar on the bottom and search for Brunt. You'll find him a few times. You can talk to us at The Big Story FPN on Twitter, at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And you can listen to us and subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.